We do not know if Nebuchadnezzar was truly converted. You read the chapter and some of the other chapters as well at one time and you think he's not there. Other times you read it and you think, well, maybe he is. Gill, right at the end of his comment on the chapter, says it is a question. He doesn't think even that he would dare answer it. He may well have been saved. There is language here that would indicate that he was moving that way, and maybe these were powerful thoughts that had changed his life, but we don't actually know. What is remarkable is that this chapter, inserted under the Holy Spirit's guidance by Daniel, has either been taken out of Nebuchadnezzar's archives, or it was in the public domain because it was a decree and he knew the content of it. But this is actually pure Nebuchadnezzar. Well, it's a little bit by Daniel, but it's quoted there. But this is Nebuchadnezzar's decree. And it may well have done an immense amount of good. But the Lord, of course, may use those who are not his own. Very difficult to say. One would think, perhaps, that the Lord, in dealing in the way he does with Nebuchadnezzar so powerfully, might do some of that for Nebuchadnezzar's own advantage, rather than just for the Jewish nation subsequently, or for his own people to enjoy. But we do have to leave it open. One would feel that it would be nice to think that Nebuchadnezzar was the same man, and he would be a good example for kings if that were the case. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar the king. Now this indicates a bit of a change, because usually when monarchs made decrees and statements like this, it wasn't usually quite as bold as Nebuchadnezzar the king. It would be accompanied by some fair descriptive words uplifting the king. But he's been stripped of all that, and he's clearly learned that lesson. So it's simply Nebuchadnezzar to the king, the king. Unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in the earth. Well, now he did have a fairly universal kingdom. He possibly just means his own, the places where he rules. But he didn't rule over China, for example, and China had kingdoms going in those days. So maybe you can say that this is a statement of evangelical intent for the whole world. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. Now, this is the language even of New Testament greetings. But for a great king who's done so many, many things wantonly and ruled with great anger and sudden temper and cruelty and put people to death for almost nothing, to be able to say, peace be multiplied unto you, as a result of his experience of being humbled, I guess the cynics among his citizens would have perhaps thought to themselves, well, we'll believe that when we see it. But maybe that really was the intent of his heart. And a ruler should rule for the benefit of his people. And maybe there was a great softening effect through the putting down of pride of Nebuchadnezzar. And maybe he genuinely did desire to rule in peace among his subjects. Well, it's interesting. I thought it good to show. Now, here is one of the greatest kings who've ever lived, the king of gold, as it were, of the golden kingdom. It says, I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God has wrought to do with me. Now, he uses the expression the high God. He's clearly prepared to acknowledge that this God is a supreme God among all the other gods, but he doesn't quite seem to have rejected all the other gods, as we shall see. But he does acknowledge that this God is a supreme God. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God has wrought to me. Now that would help the Jewish people among him. And that would subsequently help the Jewish people in the days of Mordecai and so on, that this should be known, that their gods should have been exalted, and that the people should have been told that they must act respectfully towards this God. If it meant no more, it would mean that. And that was what I meant when I said earlier, maybe this was not just for Nebuchadnezzar, but for the Jewish nation, maybe for all the peoples. Anyway, how great are his signs is, and how mighty are his wonders. But this is something, you see, that he learned by the dealing with his pride. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. Now, when I say he's not quite there, on the one hand he calls him a high god. He does mention other gods before God's time. But equally he's learned that the kingdom of this God is an everlasting kingdom. And clearly he's learned that he has the power to make significant changes in a man's life. He's learned that the kingdom of God is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. Maybe it's just there, even if Nebuchadnezzar was not saved, to rebuke every subsequent unbeliever. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. Not only is there a biblical witness, but Nebuchadnezzar acknowledged it. Why then cannot other people see it? They may find that he is their judge. And his dominion is from generation to generation. Now that's interesting. You know, you get this, what we call Hebrew parallelism, where you get one expression and the next expression is almost identical, but often not quite. And here is one of the rather significant not quites. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. So you're looking at the length of his kingdom from beginning to end, but his dominion is from generation to generation. It doesn't cease in the, not only long term, but short term, you see. That's the significance of the change. And his dominion is from generation to generation, as his son will discover. And then, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my passage, in my palace. So, here he's talking about, if you like, his carnal rest. He'd come back from war, he had probably, the general thought is that he'd been king for perhaps 37, 38 years by this time. And at the end of his 7 year in the wilderness, with the beasts of the field, was just a year or so before the end of his reign. He reigned for 45, 46 years. So these are a few years on from what we saw before. But when he says he's at rest, he probably means that there was no war, that he wasn't aware of war, his kingdom had been established, as David uses a similar language, and now he was at rest. And flourishing in my palace. And of course, what very often happens when we're at rest is that pride grows, our appetites grow and so on. I was flourishing in my palace, and then God broke into my life, you see. This was something that originated with God, not with himself. It was something which, like when death comes to us, it's not something we would welcome. He was troubled by this dream. He had forebodings. He was unsettled by it. The Lord knows how to make men shake. Despite themselves, the Lord knows how to get underneath their skin, to behind their souls. The Lord knows how to do this out of nowhere. He sometimes does it through consciousness, but got through dreams. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. So he was troubled by this thing. He speaks of visions. Whether you're to think of the different aspects of the tree, or whether you are to think that this happened night after night after night, the whole thing, I leave open to you to decide. I can't make up my mind. But I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore I made a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Now he has moved on. If he had not genuinely forgotten the previous thing that had happened, then this time he doesn't attempt to deceive. Maybe he had genuinely forgotten the other. But on this occasion, and neither does he threaten. So he's a bit softer than he was, a bit more mature, a bit more gentle than he was. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans and the soothsayers, all the different varieties, and I told them the dream, but they didn't make known unto me the interpretation of it. But at the last, Daniel came in before me. Now, many people question why at the last. I would put it like this. There's nothing there to suggest that every magician, astrologer, Chaldean and soothsayers came. And if you can imagine that Daniel, described as the master of the magicians, he actually did not belong to them as such. He was acknowledged as their head, because Nebuchadnezzar said so, but he never practiced their arts, or, I gather, mixed with them very much. I don't think they all waited till they all got together before they came into Nebuchadnezzar. I get the impression from this that a number came in here and a number came in there. And at the last Daniel, but only at the last, because there was no need of anybody else offering. There might have been others, you see. Otherwise you're faced with a rather difficult problem. Why didn't he call on Daniel first? This is many, many years after he promoted him, many, many years after the interpretation of the other dream. I guess from the king's point of view, he just put the word out generally, made a decree generally, and that they would all respond down and among Daniel, but not among them, but coming in his own way. And of course after Daniel, he didn't need anybody, so I prefer to understand at the last. To be that there was no need of anyone afterwards, even if they turned up. Not that, when we got nowhere with any of the others, then Daniel came. That might have been true before, but I don't think that's what's meant here. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, and his eyes sort of lit up, I get the impression, when that happened. Now, you see, you remember what I was saying about he's not quite there yet. Now look what he says. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God. But he could simply mean, well, this was the sort of cultural name of the God I used to support, but he doesn't mention that he doesn't really do so now. It might not be the most tactful thing to do. But you can see, I think his thoughts are in translation, and we don't know how far he'd moved. So after God's dealing with him, and he writes this after God's dealings with him, perhaps he's moved farther than we get the impression. This is a wonderful document. And maybe he's just being a little strained, a little tactful. I mean, he's not really tactful when he says, I thought it good to share the signs and wonders and so on. But here he just says, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, you see? Is he talking about the angels, the watchers? Is that what he means? Or has he got not many gods many? Well, we don't know. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians. Now, I think that was in Belteshazzar's gift and in his head. By which I mean, he had promoted him to be over them, and he calls him master magician. But he doesn't mean to say that he was like they were and did the things they did. He long since learned that that wasn't true. And I think this is just a compliment that Daniel really would just shrug off. It wouldn't mean anything to him to be called master of the magicians by Belteshazzar. He would be free of their arts, and he would be righteous and holy. It wouldn't mean anything to him. He was not tarred with their brush. But the expression is purely a a Nebuchadnezzar expression, and has no further meaning than that. Because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Again, Daniel doesn't particularly pick him up, except when he comes to the interpretation, he just gives it properly. But the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee. Tell me the visions of my dream that I've seen, and the interpretation thereof. I'm going to tell you the dream in a minute, but then I want you to tell me the interpretation. He doesn't know why it is that Belteshazzar, that Daniel, is not troubled by any secret. Actually, he is troubled in the sense that he doesn't know it off his own back. He has to pray for it and ask the Lord for it. And he did declare that to Nebuchadnezzar those many years ago, that I don't have it because I'm better than any man living, and better than the others, but simply because I humble myself before my God. So he describes now the whole dream. We've no need to read through the whole of that, otherwise we won't get through until we come to the interpretation. But we can look at verse 17. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones. Now the watchers would appear by most commentators to be the angels. But I just wonder, I mean, the angels, the saved angels, the angels that were not condemned, the angels that remained holy, they certainly would have the same view, but they could hardly make a demand of God. And that makes me wonder whether the watchers are the three persons of the Godhead. Because they watch over our lives. They never cease to take note. The Holy Spirit especially, described as the seven spirits of God, walks through the earth, observing the children and men and so on. So I just ask you, I've not really noticed it in any commentary that I've looked at, but the thought occurred to me that perhaps the watchers here are the three persons of the Godhead. And this is the demand that between them in united counsel they have made, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. Now, this is the reason that Nebuchadnezzar has made has given this great decree, and he writes this letter, because it wasn't just for him, and he understood that this was to the intent that the living, all living, need to know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. That men are going to go wrong, that men aren't going to understand what happens to them, unless they know that the Most High ruleth. And their behaviour is going to be unruly, they're going to be against the law, they're going to be lawless. But the living need to know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. Nebuchadnezzar was concerned that aspect of their dream should be fulfilled. And he giveth the kingdom to whomsoever he will. Now this of course has respect to all the subsequent kingdoms. The kingdom of silver, the kingdom of brass, and the kingdom of clay and so on. And right down to our day, the monarchies and the governments that exist, that the Most High ruleth and giveth the kingdom to whomsoever he will. Interesting to see the succession here, won't it? I wonder whether Charles will get the throne. I don't think the Queen would ever abdicate in his favour. By that time, he might be a monarch of a few years, like Edward VII. Or he may die in the meantime, and it might go straight to his oldest son. But we don't know. But what we're saying is, you see, that the Lord giveth it to whomsoever he will. The Lord giveth the prime ministers, even though they may be publicly elected. Influences the way people vote and so on. Sometimes people in democracies get voted as the poor third choice, the only one that could be agreed on by both sides, and it's usually pretty bad. And that's how it happens that the Lord setteth up over the kingdoms of men the basis of men. That's most interesting. Nebuchadnezzar understood, of course, that as a sinner, as a deep sinner, and though he was a great king, that in God's sight he was the basis of men. But it does have this other look about it, doesn't it? That if the Lord wants to bring a nation low, he sets up as its ruler, or he sets up as its government, base men. There's other places in Scripture, in the Psalms, where what happens to a nation when the fools and the robbers rule. Well, this dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen, now Belteshazzar, declare it to me, because thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Well, let's hope he meant, but God certainly meant, I think, the Trinity, but I'm not sure about Nebuchadnezzar. Right, and now we have the explanation of Daniel was astonished for an hour, and his thoughts troubled him. Obviously, the Lord revealed to him the meaning, and he was troubled. There was a space, you remember, in heaven. There was a pause for an hour. But here he was astonished for an hour. His heart troubled him, his thoughts troubled him. And Nebuchadnezzar could see that he knew what it was about, and was troubled, and he says, don't let the dream trouble you or its interpretation. I'm prepared to listen. I'm so troubled by this dream. People are very often very angry when you tell them the truth, and he says, I'm not going to be like that. So Daniel responds, I wish it was for your enemies. I wish it was for those who hate you. But then he gives a very faithful exposition. He explains how Nebuchadnezzar is that tree. Nebuchadnezzar, redolent of Babylon, reaches unto heaven like that ancient tower did, and could be seen through all the earth. His kingdom was recognized even beyond its dominions by China and so on. And the leaves were fair and the fruit much. In other words, everybody prospered, except those who came under his wrath, by the benefits of his kingdom. And here we do see kingdom benefits. You see, a lot of the time, folks know that united kingdoms can purchase more, however you look at it, can accomplish more, because they can do things together. And the scattering and the division of the kingdoms is always what happens when a kingdom is failing, when a kingdom is disagreeable to God. Now, the whole of civilization originally was not meant to be gathered around towns and cities and so on like that. But you see, it was not all that long ago that Italy became united. It was not all that long ago that Yugoslavia became united. But Yugoslavia never really was united, and it's still split up. What's going to happen among us, we don't know. But it is the mark of a failing and a disobedient nation where the folks are divided. Unless God wishes to detach one small part for special blessing, which the others aren't going to have, which might be true of the Lord's people in some sort of situations. But there. Anyway, he says about this, thou hast become grown and has become strong. Thy greatness is grown, reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. So the king could begin to see, and doubtless began to see, the drift of what was going to be said. And whereas the king saw a watcher and an holy one, only one person meant here. It's very good. The word and is a copulative. It joins two things, you see. But it doesn't always mean that. And both the Greek word and the word in the language here, it can also mean even. And if you're in doubt, just sometimes substitute even. And whereas the king saw a watcher, even an holy one, then you see there are not two. And then you see, what is true in this case, the king saw a holy watcher. See? He saw a watcher and a holy one. But it's not two people. And in his dream, he may well have seen one of the persons of the Trinity. It would have been the Lord Jesus Christ, of course. But this was not so literal. This was a dream vision. Whereas the king saw a watcher and an holy one coming down from heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth. Now, this is crucial both for Nebuchadnezzar and for the future of the realm, that he knew that this was not going to be a permanent ending. And so did his counsellors know that this was not the end of Nebuchadnezzar, because when it's interpreted that the tree is to be destroyed, yet the stump of the roots are left even with a band of iron and brass. And you know how they try to chain up madmen in order that they don't hurt each other. And of course, you couldn't put strips of iron or brass over a stump of a tree to hold it in place. You've seen that done, no doubt. So there's the picture. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, let his portion be with the beasts of the field. This is the interpretation. They shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over. Who are the they? I think the answer has to be the watchers, because probably it was not the counsellors who, when they saw his condition, drove him out. When he became mad, I think he went out. However, I leave that with you. They shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and so on, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. There's going to be a recovery, as he won't have learned his lesson. So this is like, if you like, the preaching of the word, not quite the same, but it's the same principle as the preaching of the gospel in Genesis, isn't it? See? It's hidden there. You wouldn't have really thought that was gospel, but it is very important, because he needed to know there was a purpose in what was happening, and that he would recover, so that he would have time to declare and to experience and to believe and know in his own heart that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, that is the watches, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. So he had this three times about the heavens ruling, the Lord giving to whomsoever he will, the people who are in authority over us, as well as the situations that we will enter into. All these things are by the Lord, and we should humble ourselves. Now, sometimes we might, I can't speak for any of you, of course, but we might get bitter with our Lord. We might say, why did I have to be born in this sort of place, or live in this sort of time, or whatever you say. But we're not to, because we once thoroughly learn that the Lord arranges things as he will, and he gives the kingdoms as he will, and that he has granted us to be according to his provision, to live when we live, to live where we live, to be born with the characteristics we're born, and so on. We need to know this deep within our hearts. We do not hold to the view that the Lord created the world and left it to run by seven causes. Wherefore, O King, now this is a wonderful little bit that Daniel now preaches to him. And you see, here is Daniel, the prophet or the declarer of the dream. And here he applies his message in the way that a preacher might. It's only one verse, but he applies it unerringly. But it's very interesting, you see. There's nothing in the dream to warrant Daniel promising Nebuchadnezzar anything. So he does it very delicately. A lengthening of thy tranquility. But the thing is going to happen. Wherefore, O King, let my counsel be acceptable to thee. His counsel is, break off thy sins by righteousness. He is accusing the king of his sinfulness. And thine iniquities, break off thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Practical ways as a king of kings, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Well, we don't know what he did in the intervening year. It didn't happen for a year. But certainly we've seen that Nebuchadnezzar wishes peace to all his people. Well, then just quickly. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. The end of 12 months, he walked in the palace and he began to look. Is not this great Babylon that I have built? Now, true, he had rebuilt the palace. He doubled the size of the palace and put it on the opposite bank of the river. But he didn't really build Babylon. Babylon had been built for years. And so he was just meaning his share in it. The palace that he'd rebuilt and the hanging gardens, one of the wonders of the world that he'd caused to be built. But you see, built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honour of my majesty. And as that word was in his mouth, don't know whether he was speaking to himself or whether he had some of his courtiers with him, but if we're told the word was in his mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, it's spoken. The kingdom is departed. And if he was in any doubt as to what was intended, they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as an oxen in 7 times. Now, the same hour, that's what makes me think that they are the watchers. Within that hour, I don't think the counselors would have all gathered to have kicked him out of the palace and done all these other things. Even the ones perhaps who were around him at the time, if they were. I think that this all refers to what the watchers, the Trinity, would do. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and 7 times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever it will. We're about to see a great miracle. When you consider the miracle that there will be when the Lord raises the bodies, I'm not thinking of us, I'm thinking of unbelievers, but you will go to the bother of raising the body of everybody who's ever died to face judgment. And the Lord infallibly can distinguish between those who are his and those who are not. And what a miracle he did upon Nebuchadnezzar. Because Nebuchadnezzar did not cease to be a man with a soul. He was still a man, but yet his whole body was changed. The way in which he was able to eat and ruminate, the fact that he could survive out in the wet and damp all that time, in the temperature and so on. Wonderful things were done, and yet they were done in the wonderful cause of restoring Nebuchadnezzar, but these actual miracles were done to bring him low for a time. And we're told that his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws, which certainly actually make him like an ox, does it? So he is quite unique in the form. He's clearly, obviously human, but clearly, obviously mad. His mind, he says his mind, his reason returned later. Something has happened in his mind that the watchers have actually created, and they've changed his bodily system without him ceasing to be a man. He is not a beast. He has a rational soul still. Now, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, it doesn't look a wonderful thing. And then he simply says, at the end of the days I lifted up mine eyes unto heaven. Now his reason returned unto him. And that again must have been of the watchers. The end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes. He had no power to do that. He had a rational soul, but he was mad. So the Lord was beginning to move. Mine understanding returned unto me. So the Lord began to make him, instead of looking down at the grass like sheep, though he wasn't a sheep, to look up to heaven. His reason began to return, and with his reason, his form returned. I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High. He was pleased to be different. He didn't seem to mind in his madness being a beast. But when he saw something better and began to feel it happening, he was mighty glad of that. And perhaps sometimes that's how a sinner feels, in dead in trespasses and sins. Quite happy to go along in the sin. But if the Lord begins to give a hope of something better, then they're very glad of that. But they wouldn't have discovered it by themselves. I bless the Most High, I praise and honour him that liveth forever and ever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. I'm sure you won't misunderstand that. He doesn't mean there that people are not to be accounted for. He's got a new vision for people. He says peace to them and so on. And when God looks down on us, this is simply a comparison with the glory of God. That we're less than the small grain of the dust, and that we are reputed as nothing. In comparison to God, we are valuable to God as individuals. We have individual souls and so on. But that's not what's being meant here. We're reputed as nothing. Compared with God, we don't have his knowledge, we don't have his understanding, we don't have his eternity, whatever you think. And neither can we do according to our will, though we think we might. But he does according to his will in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth. None can stay his hand, or say unto him, what doest thou? And this is what the return of his reason did for him. Very interesting, isn't it? One might expect that when a person is saved, these are the very things that would come flooding anew, or perhaps for the first time, into the experience of the one who's being changed. At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom. This is interesting, isn't it? I built Babylon by the kingdom, for the kingdom, by the might of my power, and for the honour of my majesty. He's been humbled now. And he says that the only real reason the Lord has really blessed me is for the sake of the people. That's rather nice, isn't it? I mean, it's true, but you see how it's hidden. And for the glory of my kingdom, not for me, who deserves nothing. Now, maybe he is nearly there and saved. You see, it's a very close call. It's not close to make a call, I suppose, really. But there are things that make you think you may be converted, and there's no things that make you wonder. And you don't know, of course, he only had a year to live after this, so we don't know how well he kept it up. But he did get round to writing this letter. At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honour and brightness returned unto me. Well, now every pastor, every teacher, every judge, magistrate, everyone who studies and gives themselves to study should say, but these things I have in trust for those whom I judge, whom I teach, whom I pastor, whoever we are. Not that we are bright or clever, but any brightness or cleverness that we have, it's not for us, it's for the benefit of other people, that they may live righteously, that they may live with equity, that they may be able to teach the next generation, whatever way you look at it. Mine honour and brightness returned unto me, and my counsellors and my lords sought unto me. Now, you see, Daniel declared the meaning of the vision, and he lived a year after the declaration before it happened. So Daniel, as one of the counsellors, would have made sure that they knew that that was the significance of the sum, that they weren't to take over the kingdom, that they weren't to appoint a new man. It is possible that Belshazzar the son was the nominal figurehead just in this time. We don't know. But quite clearly, they knew that this thing was going to come to an end, and they were not to trespass upon the kingdom so long as Nebuchadnezzar was alive, and that he would recover. So, as soon as there was reason, my counsellors and my lords sought unto me, and I was establishing my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now, This seems to be the remark of a saved man. It was the same thing that happened to Job, wasn't it? Everything doubled. And he says here, not only was I established, but excellent majesty was added unto me. I learned much and was held in greater respect than I'd ever been, because I dealt with the people in this way, and I dealt with my counselors in this way, and I've been through this experience, and my pride was humbled. So, the humbling of pride, the Lord adds his excellent majesty. Now, I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol, that means lift up, and honour the King of heaven. That's better. The King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment. These are things he's actually learned. And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. And let my example be a warning to you, saying, really, there. Well, our time has gone, I've been a long while, but I didn't see how I could divide the chapter. I'm sure you'll forgive me.